So, here we are, Mr. Parry. Mm-hmm. Once again, time for an on-the-record podcast.
Certainly is.
Episode 28.
Yeah, it is,
which
yeah.
is remarkable, really, isn't it?
That's right, quite remarkable.
Pretty soon we're going to be doing two of these a week, you know that, don't you?
Well, that's absolutely right, yeah.
Because we've got so many stories.
Well, we've got to see our Audio Boom friends,
yes,
haven't we?
Well, indeed. Well, they're not just our friends at Audio Boom, they're the people that put this podcast out.
Well, that's absolutely right. And they've you got know. Brand spanking new studios.
Well, they have indeed. And, so that's going to be very exciting
it's
news.
It's going to be very
indeed.
Exciting indeed, yeah.
Yeah. Because also we've got so much information to impart.
Yes.
That one of us may expire before we've done it all.
Well, that's absolutely
so
right.
So that's why we better speed up the nature
we,
of the information.
Now, listen, why don't we concentrate on politicians tonight?
Well, because everybody's talking about politics now, right? Everybody's talking about Brexit all the time. I'm sick to death of switching on other radio stations that we don't work for.
Yes.
And all they're talking about is Brexit.
Mm, that's right.
Right? You put on the TV, all they're talking about is Brexit.
I know, it's boring.
And if it's not that, it's all about, you know, who's been taking who out for dinner, who's been touching who up. But we've met a few politicians in our time.
Yeah, the papers are full of Brexit.
Well, they are.
Yeah, well, we've met a few. Now, the one who least impressed me, right, was David Mellor.
David Mellor.
Now, David Mellor, of course, got caught out years ago on a number of things.
Firstly, he
called himself Minister for Fun when he was main Minister of Culture,
Arts, Media, and Sport.
Culture, Media, and Sport, and all that kind of stuff. Oh, Minister for Fun, Minister for
he was
Fun.
A pompous chap, wasn't
really,
he?
Really pompous individual. Mm. But of course, he then couldn't keep his member in his trousers, so to speak. You know, member of
honourable
Parliament.
Honourable member.
Yeah, the honourable member in his trousers. And he ended up in a really shoddy relationship on a mattress in a bedsit flat.
Antonio DeSantia.
Yeah, with a lady called Antonio DeSantia. And you know, what a grubby man. But he's married at the time. So as a result of which, he had to organise a picture at his parents-in-law house. Yeah. Who weren't very pleased with him because
he's now married to a very wealthy woman, isn't he?
Very
who
wealthy.
Was, who was not his wife at that time.
No, she's a lady somebody.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
she's
right.
a Viscountess or something.
Yeah,
you know.
Something like that. No, he's now even more pompous.
Because he
also ended up having a radio show somewhere and he got involved in a row with a cab driver, didn't he?
Which he went all did, over the place. Yeah, do you know who I am? Yeah. You know, and all this, and effing and blinding at him. But anyway, on this occasion, he decided to tell the press, he was, don't worry, we're still a family, even though I've been shagging Antonia. and if you come down to my in-law's farm in Sussex, you'll see us all, a very happy family.
Yeah.
And he poses outside, and the fixed grins on the faces of
horrendous.
Mellor and his wife and his in-laws and the children bemused at what was going on.
Well, it was only echoed in some other ways, in a different situation altogether, with that guy, John Selwyn Gummer.
Yeah, Gummer, trying to stuff a beef burger down his
Charles' throat in the midst of mad cow disease.
That's right. What do you mean, mad cow disease affecting burgers? Oh, look, my kid's just had his third this morning.
But also, of course, Mellor's appearance at the family house at the gate there was also the inspiration for Little Britain's sketch. That
Where the
politician came out and said, unfortunately, I tripped and fell over and found my penis being inserted inside another man's anus. Everybody just knew it was Mellor. It was brilliant. But also, was he not the victim of the ghastly man who ended up going to jail, who, you know the man I'm talking about, the PR boss, Max Clifford.
Oh, that's right, yeah, Max.
Because Clifford was the guy who entirely invented the story that Mellor used to shag Antonio wearing a Chelsea shirt. Well, in fact, he never did.
Entirely invented it because he told Antonio to tell the newspaper, the tabloid newspaper, that story.
Yeah.
And a couple of other ridiculous stories. Mm. Max Clifford was also the man who told Ralph Halpin was the boss of Debenhams or something, or Top Girl or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was shagging some.
Was he not the Fifes guy?
Fife.
You know, the Fifes Times a Night guy, the banana.
Oh, yeah, I think he was. Yeah, I think he was.
He was in charge of Fifes, the banana company.
No, he wasn't in charge of Fifes, the banana company, no, but he was in charge of some retail group and he was shagging.
Was it Burton's?
It might be the Burton Group, but the young lady that he was sort of rogerising, she then sold her story. And again, Max Clifford got hold of it. Max Clifford told her to tell the paper he boasted to me about pinching Mrs. Thatcher's bum when he was at Downing Street. All these kind of rubbish, That's probably why Max Clifford's in jail.
Well, and it's not really the reason he's in jail. I mean, he's in jail for doing a whole load of other terrible things.
But he deserves to go to jail for those stories alone.
But anyway,
getting back to Mellor, right? Mm. So Mellor eventually ends up on a rival radio station doing a phone-in. And then that relationship ended. And then somebody high up in the management here at Talk Sport decided he'd be great for here, you know. And I said, no, I don't think so. I think he's dreadful. Yeah. He's boring, useless.
But he had a sort of a football leaning brain, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
He was a sort of posh man's footballer.
He was, yeah. So I had to go meet him.
Yeah.
So I go meet him in the Horse Guards Hotel, you know, a resort of scoundrel politicians, you know, around the back of Westminster.
Right.
And just off Smith Square, I think, you know.
Mm.
And so we get in there, and he was terribly, you know, toothy, you know what I mean? He's got big teeth and all that. Michael, good to see you. Yes, so sit down. What do we have to drink? And I said, oh, I'm going to have a glass of white wine. She says, get me one. I mean, it was all you and his servant, all this kind of stuff.
Right.
So anyway, halfway through the second drink, he said, excuse me. I said, yes. He said, do you smoke? I said, no, I don't smoke, you know. He said, oh. I said, why? He said, I want a cigarette. I said, you want a cigarette? I said, well, do you smoke? He said, not usually, but I just feel the urge to have one now.
So he's going to bum one off you?
Yes. I said, well, it's... You're going to ask that chap over there who is smoking if I can have one of his. I couldn't believe it.
Which you then presumably did, right?
I didn't.
Did you not?
I said, to be honest, so you got the waiter to go and get him a packet or something.
I was going to say, I'm surprised you didn't get the waiter to sort of, snap your fingers and get the waiter to come and give him a packet.
Yeah, but dreadful bloke, honestly. Mm. And in the end, he lasted here about six shows.
Mm.
And then we've never had anybody here who's come here, done a few shows and gone, who was so insistent and persistent in making sure they got their money and all kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Where's my money? I said, well, it's an invoice. I said, it takes 30 days. Like, no, I'm not settling for this, you know, and all this kind of stuff.
Well, some politicians are quite greedy, despite the fact that they have an awfully wonderful expense account.
Yes.
And they can buy loads and loads of stuff and charge it to the taxpayer.
That's right,
And never actually have to live a real life at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I may have mentioned this to you before, but Alex Salmond, when he was in Scotland, once rang me up at the Mirror when I was running the Scottish edition of the Mirror, and my secretary came in very excited because Alex Salmond was still quite a sort of celebrity name up there.
Yes,
but I think I'm right in saying that he was. I think he was still an MP in London.
Right,
but he wasn't like the first minister in Scotland or anything like that.
Yes,
but still he was an MP. Anyway, she said, "Oh, Alex Salmond's on the phone for you." I said, "Oh, that's quite." I said, "What does he want?" She said, "I don't know. He won't say." And at one time we were considering positioning the Mirror as an SNP supporting paper.
Yes,
basically because the Daily Record was the Labour paper.
Sure,
so there wasn't any point in doing that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So we were in talks about that with other people in the SNP in Scotland, including Nicola Sturgeon.
Yes.
Anyway, so it turned out that Alex Salmond didn't want to talk about politics at all because I was thinking, well, he might want a column.
Yeah.
He might want, you know, some kind of, you know, to have a sort of powwow about, you know, which way the papers represented the SNP.
Yes.
And instead, he said, actually, I've been doing for the last couple of years a racing column for the News of the World, but they've curtailed it.
Right.
And so I was wondering if you could have a word with Piers Morgan.
Mm.
And ask him if I could get a racing column in the Mirror.
Yeah. Is this just in Scotland?
Well, he had been doing it just in Scotland for the News of the World.
I see,
But he wanted to do it nationally for the Mirror.
Right.
Because I knew him a little bit. Mm. But I said, well, I'm sorry, Alex. I mean, I know you like horse racing and you like betting, because it's always been said that one of Alex Salmond's problems is that he's a massive gambler.
Right, okay.
He likes to gamble an awful lot. And he obviously wanted to supplement his income.
Yes.
And get some kind of foot in the door of the betting
business. Okay, is it well known he is a gambler then?
Well, I think those people who know him
and
those people who have observed him over the years, like the journalists and other politicians, know that he's a big fan of the Gigi's, as it were. You know?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I can't say whether or not he's overstretched himself.
No, sure.
You know, but I mean, he certainly likes
to... So did he get his call?
Likes to go, no.
No,
because I didn't find myself in a position to recommend it.
No.
You know, when you get these representations for people and you say to yourself, I mean, Piers Morgan and I got on quite well.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't ring him up with an idea that I didn't think was any good.
Exactly.
There's no point. I mean, if I thought it was a great idea,
yeah.
I might have rung Piers up and said, look, you should do this, because he'd be quite good.
Yeah, sure,
But I know exactly what Piers would have said. He would have said, well, is it coming out of your budget or mine? Because if it's coming out of mine, you get stuffed.
Yeah, that's right.
Because Piers once rang me when we were over budget, hugely over budget in Scotland, because that was what I was always doing. Yes. I always went over budget.
Well, you have to break budgets.
Yeah, you have to break budgets, otherwise they take money away from you.
That's right,
And I was always hiring more people, and we were doing more pages and all that.
Yeah.
And I said, and he said, look, he said, what the hell are you doing? I said, what do you mean, what the hell am I doing? I said, I'm running a paper. We're up sort of, you know, 50% on a daily basis. So I think we're doing rather well. We're kicking the arse out of the Daily Record and every other paper and the Scottish Sun, by the way.
Yeah.
He said, I don't care about that. I said, what do you mean? He said, you're seriously endangering my bonus.
Mm. And yeah, well.
Well, I said, well, hang on. Mm. I said, where's my bonus then? I said, if you want me to come in under budget, you might as well include me in the bonus figures. He said, well, you're not in it. I said, well, then what's my bloody incentive to come in under budget?
Exactly.
And he was on some amazing sort of £200,000 bonus if he brought the paper in under budget.
That's right, yeah.
Astonishing.
But he wanted you to do it.
So I'm afraid I didn't. That was when I was also visited at the same period because Sly Bailey had come into the paper.
Oh, right.
Who was a ghastly woman. Yeah. Who used to sort of siphon off about £1.5 million a year into her own area of expertise.
Yes, but there was obviously no criminality involved here.
I'm not suggesting that.
No, of course you're
but
not.
But she
no.
paid herself very well.
Oh, no, she did, yeah. And flew around in helicopters.
And the only thing that happened to the share price when she was in charge of the company was it went diving down through the floor.
And profit, I
had,
as well.
I had one time, I had 80,000 quid's worth of shares.
Right,
which were options given to me as an executive because I'd actually got important enough for them to finally give me some shares.
Yeah.
But the cost of them went down, the price of them went so far down the toilet that by the time they were due to be cashed
in, worth having.
They weren't worth the paper they were written on.
Shocking.
But she sent Phil Hall. You remember Phil Hall?
Yeah, of course I do.
Former editor of the News of the World, now sort of what you might call
PR
to the stars.
Troubleshooter.
So-called, And he came up to my office and basically said to me, without really any need to have done it, because I was like, well, who are you? You know, what role are you playing?
Yeah.
And he'd just been hired as some kind of consultant.
Sure.
You know? And he sat in my office and said, well, all I can tell you, Mike, is if you can't bring the paper in under budget, they'll find somebody who can.
Like me.
Well, I don't think he would have done my job. Well, far too important for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, who do you think you're talking to?
Yeah, exactly.
I threw him out of the office.
Good, good. Now, we're getting away from politicians, right? The other politician that least impressed me was David Cameron.
Yeah.
Now, Cameron was leader of the opposition.
Yeah.
He came in here twice, once when there wasn't an election campaign and once when there was.
Yeah.
And he was a complete fraud.
Yeah.
I mean, I asked him about some policies. I said, people are very worried about immigration, you know, Mr. Cameron. And he looked at me shocked and said, no, they're not.
Yeah.
I said, no, and I was doing this as Andy Townsend, you know, not really a political sort of guy. He's a footballer, obviously.
He had his own views of life.
Oh, yeah, of course he did. Andy was very, very good. But what I'm saying is, Andy would just tell it as it is. And he said to him, he said, Mr. Cameron, I live in the Midlands. And I can tell you, people are worried about immigration. He said, I don't think so. I don't see any of that. I go around the, constituencies. I said, it's the one thing people talk about in a pub every night, unfettered immigration to this country. I said, Blair's opened the doors and people are worried that they're going to, have housing problems and jobs. He said, well, it's never occurred to me. It's like talking to a bloke in Latin, But anyway, he also was carrying this cup around, you won't believe it, which said TalkSport on it, you see. So when he came in and brought his tea in the cup, and I said, oh, I see you've got the TalkSport mug there,
At least he wasn't carrying an Aston Villa mug.
Well, this is the point. Yeah. He said, always got time for TalkSport. One of my favourite stations. But someone who's aged outside told me he had to brief him on what TalkSport was on the car coming in.
Of course they would.
He'd never listened to it.
Well, I mean, people like Cameron and most of the people who are politicians in the House of Commons. And I would say that, I mean, sometimes, we had Lembit Opik in the studios a few nights ago.
Yeah.
And I'm actually tend to be on the side of people who say, not absolutely every politician is out for himself. There have been one
I
or
think
two
most of them are.
That you've met over time.
Yeah.
Stephen Pound, for example,
yeah.
who was a guy that used to come into the radio station here a lot.
Mm.
He was a great guy.
Yeah.
You know, now you could argue he was a Labour guy, but he was old-fashioned sort of Blairite style Labour guy,
sure.
and even pre-Blair.
Yeah,
he was not a rabid sort of socialist maniac, Jeremy Corbyn type.
Yeah,
and he was always very decent. He was very funny. He used to come in and tell some very amusing asides about his colleagues in Westminster.
Sure,
without. And then say, look, you can't say this on the
radio. No, exactly.
But he
was
a great gossip.
Yeah, sure.
He was very funny. But he also would help people out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I'm saying about, people like Cameron, though, and others who have risen to the top.
Yeah.
All they listen to is Radio 4.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they're living in their little ministerial bubble.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they read, the Times and the Telegraph and the Mail, probably.
Yeah.
Sure. They listened to Radio 4, and the guy probably never listened to Radio TalkSport in his life.
Years ago, when I first got on the Chester Chronicle, the local MP was terribly important,
Well, presumably you were quite important to them as well, weren't you?
Well, yes, absolutely. So if there was a health centre opening and the MP got there, he always wanted the picture on the front page of the Chester Chronicle and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, the first time I meet this guy, he's Oxford, Eton and Oxford educated MP. His name's Peter Morrison.
Oh, yeah.
He gets out of his Jaguar, which he'd driven himself, to this new health centre. Shook hands and said, "Who are you?" And I said, "I'm Mike Parry." Really? Yeah. So,
what role were you playing at the Chester Chronicle at this point?
I was a reporter.
Oh, okay.
I was the youngest reporter.
So this was before you went to to be the deputy sports editor?
Absolutely. Well, I was deputy sports editor when the sports editor was on holiday.
Oh, right. Okay.
And I would present the Angling Cup, you know, the Chester Chronicle Angling Cup, right. And my picture would be in the paper on the sports pages.
You must
present
bring
this cup
to
a load of these oaks, you know. Yeah,
yeah, it's tremendous.
But anyway,
due to your expertise in yachting, sailing,
and angling, and all this kind of stuff. Right. So Peter Morrison, when this ceremony was over, it took about 10 minutes, cutting the tape or something.
Yeah.
You know, he came and said, "Michael, isn't it?" I said, "Well, very, very well, Michael." And I thought, "What do you mean?" I just stood there and watched you cut the tape. You know, you have your 100. He said, "I'll be putting a good word in for you with your editor."
Right.
I said, "Oh, okay." He said, "And by the way," he said, "have you ever been to Parliament?" I said, "No, I haven't." No, sorry. "You must come down and see me." He says, "I can see you're a boy who's got a big future." And anyway, about roll forward 25 years. Mm. He was the guy who lost Mrs. Thatcher, her re-election campaign, when she got booted out eventually, because he was pissed all the time.
Right.
He used to drink a bottle of whiskey a day in his office, or a bottle of vodka, I think it was. I think he was a vodka man. He was permanently pissed and couldn't organise a campaign to stop...
What was he meant to be doing for her, then?
Well, he when she was challenged, leadership...
The stalking horse and all that.
Yeah, that's right. And when Major eventually took over, she could have beaten Major because the cabinet actually would have voted for her.
Right.
But Peter Morrison was so pissed all the time, he didn't know what he was doing and advised her to quit. and it became clear years later that was the worst advice. Yeah. But the story is that he has been named as one of the main protagonists in the scandal involving the boys' home that Cyril Smith was named in.
Oh, really?
Peter Morrison was involved, and the reason he wanted me to come to London was nothing to do with my future.
Oh, my goodness me.
Yeah,
so he was up to all that sort of...
He was
nonsense.
A man who never got married, if you know what I mean. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
So is he still around, then?
No, he drunk himself to death.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he drunk himself to death, about...
Imagine
two...
if you'd gone there, you could have suffered a horrible...
a horrible fate.
Horrible end, as it were.
Yeah. Mind you, I used to love going to Parliament.
Yeah.
I used to love going in the bars there and having dinner there. It was great.
Well, I mean, apart from anything else, a lot of the hacks are great fun.
Yes.
And the journalists that we've all known over the years are really good fun. And also, you get to... And if you're in and around those people, it's a very small world, isn't it? You can meet the same people, sort of, if you went, every Friday night or every Thursday night, you'd see all the same people. After you were talking about John Major, reminded me of when I met John Major the first time.
Oh, yeah.
It was when he was Mrs. Thatcher's foreign secretary.
Right.
And he came to New York, to the UN.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And, going to the UN was always quite a thrill.
Yes.
Because you didn't get to do it very often.
That's
some
right.
papers had a sort of UN guy all the time sitting in the UN.
Sure.
But we would get to go into the UN. I felt quite sort of honoured,
Yeah.
And we went to the British section of the United Nations building, which I can't remember what floor it was on. And we didn't know much about John Major, and everyone was kind of. I don't think they'd sent out many hacks with him because he was Foreign Secretary.
Sure.
He was sort of glad-handing sort of trip. So it was mostly local people. Mm. So it was like George Gordon was there,
sure.
and I think Phil Finn probably as well. A couple of people from The Times, whatever. Anyway, this is where we learned that he was he came from a trapeze artist family.
Oh, yeah.
You know, his dad was in the circus.
Yes.
So we had this joke that when we met him, instead of shaking hands like normally, we would sort of pretend to do this thing where you rub your hands in chalk
and
grab him by both wrists.
Yeah, I see.
And I think somebody tried to do it because we'd all, as usual in New York, before we went to meet him, we'd all been in the pub.
That's right,
And I think somebody was, I think it was George Gordon, was pissed enough.
Really?
To kind of pretend to do it.
That's right.
And he saw the funny side of it, to be fair to him.
Did he? Yeah.
He was actually, I always quite liked John Major.
I did. He came to PA when I was at PA because the boss of PA, Paul Potts, was just a political animal.
A man who's figured in the On the Record podcast before.
Yeah, he has, yeah. But he was just a political animal. Unless it was a political story, it was no story at all.
No.
I mean, Paul couldn't see anything in tabloid newspapers.
Oh, he hated the fact that you'd have to move... I'll come back to it in a minute, I'll tell you. But he hated the fact you had to move a political story off the front page.
Oh, absolutely.
Because something had actually happened.
Yes, that's right, Instead of, I had a tip and a wink that, they're going to ban the import of prawns from the common market.
That's right.
Because you've got to walk to them 3 hours a day and all that kind of stuff, But he came in and we sat around the table, had lunch, and Paul said, fantastic stories there. And I said, which stories?
Yeah.
And he went on about something like, the European monetary snake story,
Yeah.
What? nobody cared.
Right.
But the amazing thing is, after the lunch, I decided to stay on that floor to have a few drinks because there was a load of spare booze around, and it was a Friday afternoon. He walked off, got in the lift, and then stood at the back of the lift. And then just before doors closed, I said, are you coming to join us, Mike? And I said, no, Prime Minister, I'm staying to polish off the booze. He said, oh, right. And he came out the lift and, right. And said, I'll come and help you.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, for something, yeah. The one glass or something
well,
like that.
Well, I mean,
that,
people
have
met
nice
him.
Guy.
I mean, loves his cricket, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Loves that's
his,
right.
And he, you know, yeah. he was always in Spitting Image as a very grey character. Mm. But actually, he was quite a funny guy.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Maybe not one of the world's greatest prime ministers, but that's another
yeah.
story.
Yeah,
yeah, talking of Paul Potts and his inability to spot a news story, I remember once on a Sunday, I'm not going to name him, but you know exactly who I mean, I was having lunch and my entire family with his family on a Sunday, and it was...
Your family and Potts' family?
No. Somebody else who I'm not naming.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay, yeah.
And Potts rang the guy that I was with,
right,
to say you must get on to you know the news desk.
Yes.
You must get on to the person who's editing the paper. Because I'm not going to name who that was either.
Sure.
But it was a senior female executive.
Right.
Shall we
okay.
say.
Yeah.
And. And my mate says, why?
It wasn't about Fred West, was it?
It was.
Right,
it was
okay.
exactly that.
Yeah.
Because Fred West had just hanged himself.
That's right, just been found hanged in prison, yeah.
But Paul Potts on the Saturday or the Friday before had laid out the front page.
That's
and
right.
it had this big front page exclusive about education
yes,
in some
right.
way, shape, or
yeah,
form. Or something.
Yeah. Written really, by Will Stewart.
Yeah, really yes, boring right, story yes. about, you know, we're really going to get going on, you know, changing the curriculum.
Reintroduce the 11
yeah,
plus.
Bring back, you know, some bollocks,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so my mate was going, well, what do you mean she doesn't want to splash it?
Mm.
You know, and he's talking, I can hear him talking to the news desk, and they're saying, oh, no, she's been told by Paul, because, of course, he wasn't going to tell her to change his mind.
No.
And he's, like, now using my guy, my mate, to ring up to speak to her to say, look, you've got to make this for the front page.
Yeah, sure.
And she didn't want to do it. She was like, oh, no, well, Paul said that, you know, we can run it down the side.
She actually
column.
Said, because I spoke to Andy, who was the other guy on the back bench.
Yeah.
Was he your deputy, was he, Andy?
No, I was his deputy.
Oh, you're his deputy, right. Okay,
but then I got him fired.
Yeah, that's right, absolutely. Manchester lad, you know.
Yeah, Bolton, Manchester lad. The Bolton boy.
Bolton lad, it's great up north, you know.
Used to call him the Bolton boy, hated it.
The Bolton boy, that's right. And because I was the news editor at the time. But,
Are you sure? I don't think you were.
No,
I
wasn't, no.
Because I was at lunch with the guy who was the news editor.
That's right, yeah.
And they've just named him now.
Yeah, but anyway.
I was trying not to do that.
Anyway, he told me that he came walking back from the editor's office and said, somebody hit me on the head. She says, oh, that'll make a good front page picture then,
exactly.
won't it? You know,
yeah.
And Fred West, yeah.
Incredible.
But I met all the prime ministers. Now, Gordon Brown,
yeah.
he came in here. He came in this building, right?
Yeah.
And the powers that be, you know, Mr. Mosd and all that, said, get out the finest china. The prime minister's downstairs. Mm. And Mr. D was a political thinker exactly the same way as all those people who were then running the country, right? And was constantly saying things to me like, I'm so good to you. You know, I've just come off the phone from Downing Street.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, yeah, you know, some lickspittle, you know, you've been talking to. And Gordon Brown's going to give us an exclusive interview if you go to this meeting that he's got at some school in Bromley on Friday.
Uh-huh.
And I said, what about? What exclusive interview about what? He said, well, he's got a new policy he wants to tell you about. I said, oh, OK. Mm. Which Tory politician are you going to put up to, you know...
To balance it out.
To balance it out.
Yeah.
He said, what do you mean? I said, well, if we're going to run an interview with the Prime Minister and he's announcing some new policy, I said, we must put it to somebody on the other side and see what they're going to say.
Yeah.
He said, why? I said, because that's what's called balance. I said, otherwise we're a propaganda station for the Labour Party, aren't we? He said, oh. Anyway, we refused to do it. Mm. I rang up Andy Townsend and said, yeah, Andy said, great. So, and Moz never forgave me.
Yeah.
Never forgave me because he, you know, set this up. And we just said, we don't want to interview with the Prime Minister. I think he couldn't believe it. You
well, the trouble is, most people, when they hear a Prime Minister speaking or they hear a politician speaking, unless they're particularly good at it, they're not very interested.
Yeah, that's true.
But they've also got great sort of skills at getting their pieces written in newspapers as well.
Yes.
I've told you my story, I think, before here about Gordon Brown summoning me to his Eyrie in the Treasury when I was in Scotland.
Right.
And it turned out all he really wanted to do was talk about the guy who was the First Minister for Scotland.
Right.
It was a guy called Jack McConnell.
Right.
He's now Lord McConnell.
That's right.
And ask him how I got on with him.
Right.
Because apparently he was so dark, this guy, Gordon Brown.
Yes.
Because I've since spoken to other people in Scotland.
Yeah.
Where he would ring people up and threaten them with all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And say, I'm coming after you.
Yeah.
You're never going to do this to me again.
Yeah.
And all this kind of nonsense. You're incredible.
You have tried to ruin my reputation. Now I will ruin yours.
Yeah, but interestingly enough, as a guy sitting in his office, and it was in the midst, I'm sure I've told you this as well, it was in the midst of the second 7/7 attack.
Right.
Right. Where, you know, whole of London was on lockdown.
That's right.
But I was sitting somehow inside his office in the Treasury. People were bringing in cups of tea.
Yeah.
He was showing me pictures of his family.
Yeah.
And he seemed a very well-rounded, kind of interesting, nice bloke.
Well, when he came here, he was holding his China cup downstairs and talking football with me, you know. And I thought, hang on.
And actually, he genuinely is a bit of a football fan.
Yeah, he's a bit of a football fan. Yeah, that's right, yeah. And I thought, but the policies you've introduced are slowly wrecking the British economy. You know, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're all the same. Cameron's exactly the same. Cameron didn't even know which football team he supported in the end. He couldn't only remember they wore claret and blue.
Well, that's it. He couldn't
so he couldn't remember if it was West Ham or Aston Villa.
No, exactly right. One of the politicians I always enjoyed doing anything with was Ed Koch over in New York City.
Oh, yeah, yeah, great, yeah.
Who was hilarious and brilliant.
How am I doing? How am I doing?
Yeah, how am I doing? But he was the one that came up with all those great signs, like, don't even think of parking here.
That's right.
And, you know, there's handgun laws and all the rest of it. But my favourite thing that he ever said was during the World Series.
Yeah.
Or I think it was just before the World Series. And it was the one that Mets won, which I think was 1986. And they had to play somebody like the Pittsburgh Pirates in the sort of equivalent of the semi-final.
Yeah.
And somebody came up to him at a press conference and said, Mayor Koch, you know, the mayor of Pittsburgh says that, you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates are going to take the Mets. They're going to beat them 3-2. What do you say? And he just turned to him and he went, where's Pittsburgh?
And
it was brilliant.
Yeah,
you know,
brilliant.
Just completely shut him up in 1 second.
Brilliant.
Well, I think we're out of time.
Well, there we go. We're out of time again.
We've still got plenty more politicians to talk about.
Loads more. We might talk about them next week as
We might do some more next week.
Yeah, okay.
We're the two mics. This is On the Record.
But anyway, on this occasion, he decided to tell the press, he was, don't worry, we're still a family, even though I've been shagging Antonia. and if you come down to my in-law's farm in Sussex, you'll see us all a very happy family.
Yeah.
And he poses outside, and the fixed grins on the faces of
horrendous.
Mella and his wife and his in-laws, and the children bemused at what was going on.
Well, it was only echoed in some other ways, in a different situation altogether, with that guy, John Selwyn Gummer.
Yeah, who tried to stuff a beef burger down his
Child's throat in the midst of mad cow disease.
That's right. What do you mean mad cow disease affecting burgers? Oh, look, my kid's just had his third this morning.
But also, of course, Mella's appearance at the family house at the gate there was also the inspiration for Little Britain's sketch.
Where the
policy came out and said, unfortunately, I tripped and fell over and found my penis being inserted inside another man's anus. And, you know, everybody just knew it was Mella. You know, it was brilliant.
The story is that he has been named as one of the main protagonists in the scandal involving the boys' home that Cyril Smith was named in.
Oh, really?
Peter Morrison was involved, and the reason he wanted me to come to London was nothing to do with my future.
Oh, my goodness me.
Yeah,
so he was up to all that sort of
He was a man who never got married, if you know what I mean. Nudge, wink, wink.
So is he still around then?
No, he drunk himself to death.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he drunk himself to death, you know, about
imagine
two...
if you'd gone there, you could have suffered a horrible...
a horrible fate,
a horrible end, as it were.
Yeah.
And he sat in my office and said, well, all I can tell you, Mike, is if you can't bring the paper in under budget, they'll find somebody who can.
Like me.
Well, I don't think he would have done my job. Well, it's far too important for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, who do you think you're talking to?
Yeah, exactly.
I threw him out of the office.
Good.